You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, welcome to the show. Day two of the Cheltenham Festival, coming to you once again from the ROA FitzDares Lounge at the bottom of the courtyard here at Cheltenham. It is another cool, grey morning, but thankfully the rain has relented. It's Wednesday, March the 13th. It felt like Friday the 13th for Nicky Henderson yesterday, and his week continues to get worse. I'm joined not by one, but two of our beloved podcast regulars today. Yeah. If I use an adjective like that, it must be Lee Mottershead and Rishi Persad. What a duo. Oh dear, oh dear. For Nicky, this just gets worse and worse, Lee.
It's desperately, desperately sad. All trainers, all top trainers, covet this meeting. They look at this meeting on a 12-month basis. They're aiming all year for it, all season for it. And Nicky Henderson, probably more so than any British trainer, revolves his entire campaign around the Cheltenham Festival. And for this to happen, at the same meeting at which he'd lost Constitution Hill already, I feel tremendous sympathy for him.
So just to recap, obviously Constitution Hill gone before the meeting. The runners yesterday, barring Lucia in the champion hurdle, all ran deplorably.
All pulled up,
didn't finish. So John Bonn is out today, First Street is out today, and there's one other out today.
King Pride.
Yeah, there are a couple who do run in the Coral Cup.
Yeah.
And then Shishkin will not be running in the Gold Cup. But Sergino has been declared, as has Shanna Bob. So there are chinks of light in there somewhere. Apparently none of the runners today have returned anything abnormal, yet Shishkin has returned a bad blood count.
I heard Nicky talking to Lydia yesterday, Lydia asked him about whether there was any way you could ascertain whether these horses are fit to run or not, and he said there's nothing at home that would give you that indication. And that must be the most difficult thing for him, because I can't imagine Nicky would have done anything different in the build-up to the festival than in previous years.
Just some of the wording in the latest of what have been many statements from Nicky Henderson in recent days. You know, it was there for all to see. There is obviously something affecting nearly all our horses. That must be an incredibly hard thing for someone like that to have to write at a time like this. One thing I would say, and this has been repeated before, Nicky Henderson gets a lot of hard press, not necessarily from the press, but from some racing fans, some social media users, and he has often been an easy target. But over the last few weeks, his behaviour has been spectacular in terms of connecting with the media, and therefore directly with racing fans using social media. He couldn't really have handled this, I don't think, any better.
Did you speak to him yesterday at all, Rishi?
I didn't have the opportunity to speak to Nicky, but I imagine yesterday he was under an enormous amount of pressure, because as the day wore on,
things got worse.
People started to become more aware that so obviously there was a bit of hope going into the festival that all the horses that ran badly in the lead up to Cheltenham were just a sideshow for the horses that were targeted at Cheltenham, and they may have obviously turned things around, but that never happened. And as the day wore on, it became apparent that he was under an enormous amount of pressure, and he was trying his best with his team to deal with that.
All right, well, we're all scratching our heads. There's all sorts of supposition about why horse X is running, why horse Y isn't running, how viruses might spread through yards, bad scopes, blood tests, and so forth. I just want to get a veterinary perspective on this, an independent veterinary perspective. I'm always leaning on Pete Ramson, senior partner at Rossdale's in Newmarket, but he often comes up with the goods for us, and he just joked to me, you asking me to cram 6 hours of veterinary expertise into 2 minutes, to which I said, Pete, yes, frankly, I am. So why is it, Pete, that a horse can essentially show that there's nothing wrong, the tests can be perfect, blood's come back, 100% blood count, and the horses can run like their legs are tied together and everyone's left scratching their head? What generally is the explanation for nothing showing up, horse still running badly?
Morning, Nick. God, it comes down often to vets don't have all the answers. You can definitely get so screening horses for sickness with either scoping or blood tests, and they both attack the sort of health issue from different angles, as it were. that more often than not, if you've got a sickness problem in an individual or a yard, that will show up something. But obviously there can be a delay between when a horse is exposed to some sort of viral challenge, just as you or I, you know, if your child has come home with a flu from school, it may be several days before you get it, and then several days before you manifest it, and that also plays out in terms of when a horse might then develop secondary mucus in the lungs or signs of an infection on a blood sample. But there are definitely situations where, despite scoping, despite bloods, and unpick, you know, and sometimes our investigations get further and deeper, you start analyzing feed and air quality and various things in a yard, and we still have situations year on year where you end up scratching your head and just saying to the trainer, look, we don't know what's causing it. So most situations are fairly simple, but sometimes we just don't have the answers.
I was going to say, do you find that, as in humans, you get some periods of time, some years, when, you know, the mutations of these viruses are more severe and, you know, they spread more rapidly and they go like wildfire through a particular training centre, and that you have more of a job containing it?
Yeah, I think if you speak to any racing vet around the country with any years under their belt, they'll say, look, we've had good years and bad years, and that might be training centres or individual yards. And sometimes you can put your finger on it, and we always talk about the virus, but as you know there's a mix of both viral and bacterial challenges that horses in training are exposed to. Most of the time they're fine, but occasionally one breaks through and causes a problem, and not every individual in a yard will have the same level of immunity, won't be hit the same. But you can have really, really healthy years, and then occasionally you'll have a blip where you'll hear on the grapevine, you know, yards that aren't under your care, as well as yards under your care, you know, aren't firing or are scoping dirty. And sometimes we have answers for those situations, and sometimes we don't. And, you know, there's a standard sort of panel of bugs that cause racehorses to be under the weather. But there are also things out there that we don't really fully understand or don't have tests for or can't look for at the moment, you know. So, by and large, we have a fairly good handle on yard health, but occasionally you end up in really frustrating situations where, despite all the scoping and blood sampling in the world and treatments and looking into it, you just have to let nature run its course, and a yard will come out the other end inevitably fine, you know.
Pete, thanks so much for your time.
No problem, Nick.
So, no joy for Nicky Henderson. John Bonn out, leaving El Fabiolo, it seems, a straightforward task. Shishkin out of the Gold Cup. And if it was a day of woe for Henderson, it was business as usual for Willie Mullins. Three winners, none of them a surprise. Gaelic Warrior, the biggest price, but Lossie Mouth and State Man, the, what do they call it? The muggy double. Obliged. Jane Mangan gave you not only that muggy double like everybody else, but she also gave you the 50-1/3 in the mayor's race. So yeah, all credit to Jane on yesterday's podcast. What do we make of yesterday's action, Lee? You are allowed to say underwhelming if that's what you feel.
The word underwhelming was exactly the word that was popping into my head. I spoke to someone after the champion hurdle, a Cheltenham regular, who said they couldn't recall a more underwhelming response to a champion hurdle win. And I don't think that's in any way a direct criticism of State Man. I think it's just that we had Hamlet without the Prince, and then the horse who was taking his place at the head of the market, he won, but he wasn't wildly impressive. On our Racing Post figures, it was the worst champion hurdle winning performance since Royal Gate. He's probably around £9 or £10 below the level that enabled him to finish second last season, when Connections widely acknowledged he was below par. So the fact he was still able to win the champion hurdle without Paul Townend having to do a great deal underlines the lack of depth to that race this season. That said, He's a very, very good horse. He deserves to be a Champion Hurdle winner. But oddly, on Champion Hurdle Day, he wasn't for me in the probably top one or two, or maybe one or two or three star performances on the day. I thought it was a day that in which Gaelic Warrior was sublime, Lossie Mouth was great. Corbett's Cross, for me, probably produced a performance of the day, the National Hunt Chase.
Yeah, very impressive, even though it's a small field. Just going back to the Champion Hurdle briefly, Rishi, I am the biggest fan there is of Jack Kennedy. I sing his praises all the time here on the podcast, but I was a bit surprised that he didn't seize the initiative or try and take the bull by the horns on a confirmed mud-loving stayer when they turned for home, having gone an absolute crawl. They started off at a walk and finished at a walk.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. The only thing is, I've always felt that when you are riding a horse that's a stayer and you go hard,
yeah,
you're only making it easier for the hold-up horse. I think the winning margin would probably have been exaggerated if he had gone harder sooner.
Yeah. So you're on the principle that the fastest way to get a slow horse beaten is to try and make it go
exactly.
too fast. Yeah.
I mean, I think, just going back to what Lee said about the performances yesterday, yes, I agree entirely with what he's saying, by the way, but I think we'll remember the horses that won yesterday, State Man, Lossie Mouth, Gaelic Warrior. I don't think we'll remember the races.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much drama, and there wasn't much in the way of you saying, oh, that surprised me, or there was very little of it. It's not just about a bunch of favourites winning, it's about the execution of
Indeed.
The races, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Indeed. They were all straightforward for Paul Townend. In none of those three wins did he have to face any serious challenges. I mean, obviously he was on very good horses, so they took him through the race, but you could call Gaelic Warrior, Lossie Mouth and State Man the winner a long way from home.
Lots of challenges faced by Cheltenham in the run up to this meeting, and none more so by the weather, which has done for the Glenfarclas, easy for you to say, cross country chase, and it appears to have done for it for good as well for this year anyway, Lee.
Yeah, John Pullen, the clerk of the course, went out this morning, 8 a.m. inspection. He decided, understandably, that parts of that just weren't safe to race on. There was movement beneath the ground. We've had that much rain here. And given there is still further rain forecast through the meeting, he's decided there isn't any point really in rescheduling it for Gold Cup Day on Friday, which had been the backup plan. They're talking about the races now being abandoned. I half wondered whether they should at least think about staging it in April.
That's a good idea.
They've got 2 days here. They're days on which there's mainstream television coverage, because ITV is based at Newmarket, so there would be mainstream coverage of it. And I'm sure that most of the horses in the race would hang around for it. Well, I suppose some might be going towards the Grand National. Yeah. That might be a factor. But it's worth looking at anyway. But it's a real shame. And in a wider sense, it was a difficult day for Cheltenham yesterday, not just with the ground on the track. If you looked at social media, lots of people were having trouble. I mean, the BBC's John Hunt got stuck before racing. Lee Westwood was on social media this morning criticising the car parking arrangements and the means for getting out of the track. I saw a tweet from Mary Rojo, who's a senior employee at Vice France Gallo, who was making her first visit to Cheltenham, and she said she won't forget it because she showed a picture of a car halfway underground. So really difficult in that sense. We had two fatalities as well. It was a rough old day in many ways on day one.
It was, and one of those fatalities, Highland Hunter, had played an extraordinarily important part in the funeral of Keegan Kirby, the young jockey that was killed in a point-to-point fall, and he'd been taken from his current stable, Fergal O'Brien, back to his old stable of Paul Nicholls, and took part in what was an incredibly moving scene last week. So that loss will have been felt incredibly keenly. And then in the Boodles, Ose Partier was owned by the same owners who owned the winner. All sorts of torn emotions through yesterday.
Indeed, very difficult day for so many people. You mentioned Highland Hunter and the relation to Keegan Kirby. It's hard to know exactly what to say when something like that happens, because it is so brutal. Because you're thinking you may be, moving on, and then something like this happens, and it brings everything back to the surface as intense as you can imagine.
Sometimes just stating the bald facts is about the most powerful thing you can do, really. But clearly, Highland Hunter, Ose Partier will be greatly missed. Just returning, Lee, to your point about logistics here at Cheltenham, I know the track was done no favours last year when the Gloucester police decided to rearrange the traffic priorities leaving the course. You can't now turn left onto the Evesham Road and go back down through the town centre from the racecourse. You have to go right and then back round. And that's putting an hour on a lot of people's journeys that wasn't there before, in addition to the nightmare of actually leaving the car park.
Yeah, I think there's a cut-off point. We left last night probably gone seven by when you could turn left, and that does make a difference, because it's a heck of a long way to go the other way around. And I think this matters, because there is a narrative of falling attendances here. We're 40,000 down last year on the year before. Yesterday's attendance was only about 100 down, but Cheltenham will be down across this whole festival. Advanced sales give a very clear indication of where they're going to be, and they're going to be about 8,000 down across the meeting. Key when you're in that sort of situation is that those who come have to have a good time, because you need them to come back. And the action on the track, no matter how good it is, one of the things that people will remember is how easy it was to get in and out. And if the journey home is miserable, if they can't get the car at the car park, if they're stuck in traffic, that impacts on their day. Some things are beyond Cheltenham's control, but it will be a concern for them. Because I say retention at a time of falling attendances is absolutely vital.
Well, no one's going to get the tiny violin out for me, but I'm staying 3 miles away in Leckhampton. Very fortunate to have found a house so relatively close during Cheltenham week, which isn't an arm and a leg. But it took over an hour to do 3 miles.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that was after you'd spent half an hour trying to get out of the car park.
Yeah, it matters. There are some things they can control. There are some things they can't control, but I'm sure that last night there were deep conversations about what they could possibly do to make things better, because we have got more rain forecast through the week. To be fair, they have spent a lot of money on, I think it's called trackway, things you put down over
38,000 square feet of trackway laid down in preparation for the meeting, but it just wasn't enough.
No, so they've made an effort, but it wasn't enough, as John Hunt, Mary Rojo and Lee Westwood could testify.
I mean, I think it's fair to say that, you know, given a lot of the subject matter that we've either dealt with or been dealing with this morning, there's a little bit more gloom than you'd like after one day of the Cheltenham Festival. But for everybody, I think the victory of Chianti Classico was an extremely welcome one for all sorts of different reasons. Kim Bailey has been training quite a while, and has a win for him and for school friends Sir Francis Brooke and Richard Pilkington was one to warm the cockles, a good old-fashioned Cheltenham winner. Kim Bailey's with me now for the third time in 10 days. This is getting ridiculous, isn't it?
Well, I have to say, it's a real thrill. You caught me walking up the stairs. I wasn't quite sure I could have the energy to talk to you.
I'm guessing the party was a good one.
Yeah, well, sadly it wasn't a staff party or anything else, and the owners obviously got back to London, but we were out celebrating with a mutual friend's birthday, and I had the pleasure of sitting next door to Alice Plunkett all night long, so I was a lucky person. But all I can say is that I think that the next time we have a horse, we ought to call it Margot rather than Chianti Classico, because, I mean, I might feel slightly bit better this morning.
Were you on the Chianti all night?
I didn't actually look at the label at the bottom, but I think it was certainly its first cousin.
Tell me a little bit about how the horse is this morning, and also importantly how Trelawne is, because he didn't get any further than the second fence.
Yeah, no, both horses, they know they've been to Cheltenham. Chianti Classico is a bit stiff, but otherwise he's fine. Trelawne had quite a nasty cut on his near fore joint, and then he's got stitches in that, so as a result of that he's quite sore. Yesterday I was very concerned about his hind leg, but actually this morning I think his hind leg's the least of his worries. But you know, both of them will be, you know, I think in a period of three or four days will be absolutely fine.
And do you think either of them will run again this year?
Certainly, I think Trelawne will probably not. He'll take longer, and he's a horse that really wants soft ground. I mean, proper soft ground. Chianti Classico, I'd like to see how he always takes his race quite badly, and he needs at least a month between his races. So, you know, we've got possible of Aintree, but if he doesn't run again this season, he doesn't have to. He's done what we've asked him to go. He's been an absolute revelation. He's been an absolute gem to train. You know, we've all had a huge amount of fun out of him, and you know, we don't need to go to the world too often. We got lots of things to look forward to for the future with him.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe the Grand National next year.
Well, David Bass was absolutely adamant afterwards, when he was making no sense after the race, to say that the Grand National was the one race he wanted to ride him in. But you know what David's like.
I do. You were both being tremendously rude about each other after the race. It's like the odd couple.
Well, we probably are, but we get on very well, and it is pure lively banter, and that's really important that you do have that lively banter, because at the end of it, the whole sport is so high pressure when you get to these big days. If you can't have a laugh at the same time, it's not worthwhile, and I'm very lucky. He might be alternative, he might be different, he might be very opposite to me, but he's a great person to have as a stable jockey.
Kim, I preface this by saying you've been training for an awful long time. You have. But it always strikes me you don't have that mentality. You're not someone who likes resting on, you know, past glories and being tremendously nostalgic. You like to kick on and move forward. Do you feel that this horse and these horses sort of lay a bit of a foundation for, you know, what might come next year and beyond? How are you looking to sort of move the operation forward through the next 5 or 10 years?
Well, I very much hope that the win yesterday will bring on board some you know, new blood as such, you know, one's got to capitalise on. There's no point in life looking back what happened last week, because that's been and gone. You've got to look to the future. We've got some nice horses to go to war with next season, you know, and we're very patient with our horses, and you know, we'll give them time. So we've got, you know, quite a lot of horses that perhaps haven't shown much this season, which I think in time will do so. You know, I've got a good team around with me, and they've been with me for a long time, and that team will be with me for a long time, all being well, but we'll keep moving quietly forward in the right direction.
Yeah, and your assistant Matt's been with you for what now? I was going to say 15 years, something like that.
Yeah, and he's done 16 years with me now, and you know, he's very involved in the whole operation. It doesn't matter who you are; you're only as good as the people you employ. And I say Matt's been absolutely excellent the whole way through. I gave him partnership at the business about 3 years ago, so he's very much involved with it, and that's how it should be. He needs rewarding for what he's done, and it's good that he's here with me. We sing off the same hymn sheet. You know, you're going to ask me a question, you can ask him a question, you'll get the same answer. We've been working together for a long time now.
Yeah, no, it is a vibrant young team behind you, even if the stairs are proving troublesome this morning.
Well, that's life, and thank God we got the opportunity to be feeling a little bit worse for wear as a result of something you can celebrate.
Enjoyed it. I mean, this is almost getting a weekly slot now, but frankly, I don't mind if all this success continues. Kim, thanks so much.
Pleasure. Thank you so much, Nick.
Well, normally you can guarantee that this podcast is pretty jolly during Cheltenham, so we will try and restore some glee to proceedings as we try and eat the largest pan of chocolate I've ever seen. You're not enjoying that, Rishi, are you?
No, I've got to be honest, Lucky. It's not in my top 100 pan of chocolates.
Poor old John, who's been looking after us so well.
John's in my
top
100.
Fizz Dares ROA marquee.
He's a lovely chap, John.
He's tremendous.
Really nice man.
He does keep calling you Mr. Luck, which is somewhat disconcerting.
I know. Makes me sound like my dad. Now, today, Lee, business as usual again for Mullins. Every favourite winning, Ballyburn, Factor File, El Fabiolo,
sure.
Sa Majesté.
Nice. I'm not sure everyone. No, I think Ballyburn is the banker of the meeting, I think, for most people. I hope he wins easily, and I think he will win easily. Although I was out on the gallops on Sunday morning with Rachel Robbins, dual winner yesterday, and I started a question at that point. Rachel, knowing the yard so well, is there, and before I could ask the question, she knew what I was going to ask and said Mercury 50-1.
Oh, that point,
well, there you go, you see. Wow. Well, it was 33s at that point, to be fair, but yeah, she likes him. I think Ballyburn should win, hopefully will win. El Fabiolo, yeah, although in my head, I just wonder if they can fire up Edward Stone and ride him as they rode him at Newbury. He looked to love every second of that. Mm. And
what a great result that would be.
It would be. And Nico de Boinville was right. El Fabiolo is not a perfect jumper.
Passad doesn't like it at all. I said, what a great result that would be, trying to tug the heartstrings. And he wrinkled his nose up and curled his lip.
I think it'd be a great result. And I think Stay Away Faye might be Factor File.
Wow. I didn't... What's wrong? At the result, just at the likelihood of the result, I wrinkled my face.
Dude,
I just can't see El Fabiolo being troubled by anything in the race. I thought maybe John Bond would give him a race. I'd had a couple of discussions with two well-known riders who were excited about the fact that Nico de Boinville was going to be back on board, and John Bond might be, because of the way Nico rides, nothing to do with the ability of any of the other riders, but the length that he rides in the saddle, it encourages John Bond to race in a different style than when you ride shorter. And that was an interesting angle to why John Bond might have provided a stiffer test. I can't see Edward Stone. I mean, I love Edward Stone. He's a terrific horse, but I just don't think there's anything in his makeup. The race he won at Newbury, I mean, it was a nothing race in the end. His performance was terrific. I get that, but he beat nothing.
Yeah, all I would say, he ran pretty close to his PB. If you have a situation like yesterday, where State Man, great horse that he is, probably ran 9 or 10 pounds below his best. If El Fabiolo was to do something like that, maybe influenced by a jumping mistake here or there, then he would be in trouble. He's much the likeliest winner, but I don't think he's a penalty kick.
But on an individual basis, I think State Man ran below his best last year.
Yeah.
I don't think his performance in winning the county was actually, in terms of his overall career,
massively well happy.
Huge, yeah. And I just think, and Willie Mullins himself said it, he doesn't think he's as good a horse here at Cheltenham. So, horse by horse basis, State Man, underwhelming in terms of his overall ability. Yeah. El Fabiolo is just a machine. Okay. I think he's miles clear of them, and I imagine it to be a procession. It'll be the second, sorry, it'll be the one that brings up the century.
Oh, so you're assuming that Factor File wins then?
I think.
Or do you think he'll win the Coral Cup?
I don't think he'll win the Coral Cup. I think obviously Ballyburn will win.
Yes.
Factor File will win, and El Fabiolo brings up Century in the Queen Mother Championship.
What about you, Nick? Factor File or Stay Away Fay?
Neither. I've actually gone for American Mike.
Have you?
I don't think he minds the crap ground.
Okay.
And actually quite likes it.
And he's already beaten Factor File, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, we've already beaten Factor File. He was sick when he was beaten in between times. Comeback win was fine. The fact that they've supplemented him here, rather than running him in a race already, he already had an entry, the Turners, where he was a perfectly viable contender, it strikes me as a measure of the confidence of Gordon Elliott. All of whose horses, barring the horse in the last, who's got problems anyway, all of whose horses ran pretty well yesterday without winning. So
yeah, and actually he deserves a change of luck too, given the cross country was abandoned. Yeah. I mean, that was his big shot.
I had the dubious honour of doing the beaten jockeys yesterday on ITV. Obviously, poor Jack Kennedy.
Did you ask some good questions?
Some brilliant questions.
Did you say
Jack Kennedy?
I always enjoy those.
Yeah, they're really good. Really,
the questions are the best.
Yes, Jack Kennedy, Firefox. But to be fair to him, despite the fact that his horse is all wrapped, so he had a smile on his face, but he must have been sick of the sight of me saying, "Oh, tell me about your beaten horse again," by just saying Jack Kennedy.
So you just went Jack Kennedy, Irish Point, not Jack Kennedy. Why didn't you kick on off the bend?
I did ask him a couple of questions. Yes. But I wouldn't ask anything that silly.
No.
I've done sillier things in my time, but not that one.
I'm disappointed you didn't like that panna. Just looking at that panna chocolate there. It might not be as buttery as you'd like, and it's disappointing that it's come with a sachet of flour.
It gets better the more you eat.
But well, that pastry.
It's cold.
Yeah, it is cold. It should be warm.
It's chewy.
Yeah.
It's actually... Now I've eaten it all. It's really nice.
No.
All right. Need something to wash it down with, which we will in a few moments. Right, time for the weekly review from the Point to Point scene, brought to you by Thoroughbred's Point to Rules bonus, which dangles a £5,000 carrot for any pointer sold through Thoroughbred that goes on to win on debut under rules. And joining me to discuss all things point to pointing this week is our friend Ben Atkins from the Pointing Pointers podcast. All right, Ben, let's start with It's on the Line, Thoroughbred's poster boy. Is he going to win the St James's Place Fox Hunters? And is his position at the head of the market going to strengthen over the next couple of days after what we saw yesterday with Corbett's Cross and Derek O'Connor for Emmett Mullins?
Yes, I think it is. I did an hour-long podcast on this very race yesterday. And I think, as boring as it is, you know, favourite at the top of the market there, now owned by JP, of course, I think it's very likely to win. Yeah. And I'd imagine it'll be one that gets rolled into accumulators as people look to get out of trouble on day four.
All right, let's go back to the point field and talk about a horse who will be eligible for Thoroughbred's Points to Rules bonus and has a pretty good chance of getting it as well, out of the Chris Barber stable.
Yeah, so Dancing in the Moonlight, been entered in the upcoming sale on the 20th of March, which the bidding is from 9 a.m. The catalogue for that's going to be released this week, Nick, and a horse that Chris Barber trains, as you say, is going to be offered for sale there.
There is a continued struggle to get enough racing on because of the wet weather. What have we got so far this weekend?
Well, we've only got one abandonment. So the further six meetings, I won't list them all out now, send people to sleep, but the further six meetings are going ahead this weekend, including at Hutton Rudby, where me and Sam are going to be. Last week we were involved in the launch of a new campaign to win a share in a racehorse. So me and Sam will be at Hutton Rudby on Saturday if you want to come and see us. A little bit about that, Nick, if you don't mind. Go Pointing has launched a unique prize draw where it's free to enter, and basically you can win a share in a pointer for the 24-25 season. The six shares are available with six different trainers. So Station Yard, Charlie and Fran are getting involved, Alan Hill, Kelly Morgan, Ed Walker, Sam Cowden, Tim Vaughan. So completely free to enter. We've had a good amount of entries already. You can go on the website on gopointing.com. And next season you can be at the point-to-point course with your name on the owners list.
What's impressed you in the point field in the last week or so?
So former Henderson inmate Bothwell Bridge was a really game winner of the level two conditions race at Guildsborough. I was always nice to see things in the flesh. You know, you see things slightly differently. Won very readily for Kelly Morgan. It was also nice to see a winner for Jerry Halliwell and Christian Horner at the same track at the weekend. An impressive
display. They need a bit of cheering up at the moment, yeah.
Well, yeah, you could say that. And they did look very happy. I'm pleased to report, Nick. They've got a gorgeous, very nearly black mare by Malinas, who was an all-the-way winner, ridden by Jack Andrews. They're on course. And I was musing to myself on the way home, how many sports could you just pitch up to you know, with all their press attention at the moment, and be completely unhassled and just have a nice time and go home again. There's very few sports they wouldn't have to take security to, I'd wager. But great to see them supporting Pointing. Other things from this weekend, Nick, Station Yard, Charlie and Fran split up across the country and divided and conquered, two winners at two locations from five runners in total. So perhaps if you're looking for horses that have caught the eye, Cap Royale would be one of those. He is going very nicely in the point-to-point field and will almost certainly go back to Aintree, go to Aintree, I should say, step back up in trip, and the better ground will definitely suit his chances when we get there. It seems sacrilege to be talking about Aintree this week, but he'll take his chance in the Fox Hunters there for sure.
Good stuff. And Ben, when we started this series, you were giving quite a big shout to Sine Nominate, so maybe strike a blow for the Brits against It's on the Line and Co in St James's Place Fox Hunters. Do you still like her?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And I messaged Fiona Needham yesterday morning just to check that I was reading the form right and she would be fine on this ground. She told me that it was near enough heavy when she won at Wetherby last time down the back straight and that she'd cope with conditions absolutely fine. So if backing nearly evens favourites isn't your thing, each way seen nominee is definitely my shout, yeah.
Well, you have the brace through.
You won't be getting any Glenn Farkler, sadly, out on the course today because of the abandonment of the cross country race. But that's not going to stop us enjoying the sponsor's product. I'm very pleased that Lawrence is joining us from Glenn Farkless alongside our good friend Neil Phillips, who never misses an opportunity for anything.
Thank you very much.
Completely.
Lawrence, what are you going to treat us to today?
So today we've got our limited edition 15-year-old. We released this in sort of November, December to celebrate 15 years of sponsoring the Glenn Farkless cross-country steeplechase. It's 15-year-old. We're kind of known for our 15-year-old whiskey. So we thought, what better accompaniment than 15 years of sponsorship and 15-year-old whiskey?
Okay.
Hopefully it's not too early.
So tell me the difference between a standard model, if you like, and the 15-year-aged Glenn Farkless.
Well, the best thing about Glenn Farkless is the recipe doesn't really change so much. This has been specially selected for this bottling, but we sent sherry casks exclusively, matured in our warehouses, some of the largest stills in Speyside, directly gas-fired, really heavy new make spirit, and combine that with sherry casks, you've got a sweet and smooth, really, really delicate, but still full of malty power whiskey.
Okay, tell me about the cask then, and why that is special.
Ex Oloroso, so sherry cask.
Yeah.
That adds a sort of sherried fruit Christmas cake, Christmas spices. That's kind of what we're known for, is that Christmas cake in a glass, Glenfarclas feel. And the 15-year-old is one of our sort of blue ribbon. This is what we're known for. This is Glenfarclas in a glass.
The guys can't wait.
And this is, there's no messing here. This is
this is neat whiskey.
This is a tot at 9:44.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning.
Lee's been looking forward to this, because I remember last year I sent you back to the weaving off back to the press room, whereupon you spilled your coffee all over your laptop.
Very unfortunate.
Lee Motta said, who is known as the most professional member of the racing media.
You know, I think I was semi-tiddled. And I should just stress going into this that I really enjoy what we had last year's cocktails, because I'm not really a whiskey drinker, and the cocktails were delicious. I am just fearful that neat could be beyond me.
So what we like to say is that there's different ways of having your whiskey.
Yes.
The best way to have it is your favourite way. So I would always recommend starting neat, and then add a little bit of water, see how you go, and a bit more water to sort of open up the flavours.
Incredibly enticing notes.
Because a lot of people will drink whiskey with ice in.
Yep.
Sure. You as a purist would probably say that's
You'd think so. But our general point of view is the best way to have it is your favourite way.
Take it whatever way you like.
If you like it in a cocktail, that's fine. You can have them at the cocktail stand. We have them here.
It's very strong, isn't it?
It is quite strong.
Rich,
for the morning.
Yes, it is very strong.
How do you like the 15-year-old?
I love it. I'm not a whiskey drinker. I'm still actually getting over the number of pints of Guinness I had at the rugby on Saturday.
Rishi's not a big boozer. No. He had as many as 3 pints, I'm told. More than that.
And a Cornish pasty to wash down the Guinness.
Can't be a pasty.
It's very hot, pasty.
Was it? They can be too
That's
hot.
Not, that is nice. I do quite like whiskey.
And you like it neat, or do you like it a drop of water?
I would rather not have it with water.
Yeah.
I'd recommend for the ones who are less into their whiskey, just a little.
And I like a whiskey cocktail, like I'd like an old fashioned or a whiskey sour.
What's nice? What are we doing? This just dropping.
So sometimes with the higher ABVs, you lose some of the nose with just the high alcohol. So rather than the nose and the aromas hitting your nostrils, instead you just get alcohol sort of numbing it. But if you add just a little bit of water, you bring the ABV down to 37% rather than 46%, and that allows you to get some of the.
Sorry, the aromas. Just for the ignorant, ABV.
Oh, sorry.
Alcohol by volume.
Yeah. There you go. It's a man that knows ABV.
It was like a reflex.
It was like, got the buzzer was there.
It was really.
It's like a countdown conundrum.
Buzzing in.
It wasn't it? Really? Oh, God.
But guys, Lee, what do you think now? You've got a drop of water in there.
It does make it better for my. I think it smells beautiful. The aromas.
The enticing notes that I referred to earlier.
But I am just as fearful that last year I almost destroyed my laptop. And therefore, bear in mind, we're only up to day two. The explanation to the office,
Here's what I think though, Lawrence. What you really need, I'm enjoying this very much. I think Nicky Henderson would appreciate a couple of bottles of that today, don't you?
At least.
Take the edge off.
One for every non-runner.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm really sorry about the race
today.
No,
it's a shame. The greatest tragedy for me, actually, is on the back label we have the last 15 winners from the last 15 years. And what a shame that if we were to do another one for the 20th anniversary or whatever, we won't have anything for 24.
Oh, that is a shame. Jean Petra, 2009.
Yeah, how many names can you remember?
I bet you rattle off. I might have got Tiger Roll and Delta Work.
Oh, you'd have got Balthazar.
Yeah. We had a few people coming in yesterday who said they remembered Balthazar King. Who was here yesterday as well?
He finished second in a Grand National, didn't he? And then got hurt badly the next year, didn't he? And then made his miraculous recovery. Okay,
Tiger Roll and Delta Work won 5 of the last 6 renewals of the Glenfarclas Cross Country. Who broke their sequence in 2020?
Oh my word. So that was just before we shut down. It was about 3 days before lockdown.
No, give us a clue, Richard.
He's got it. It wasn't the... Jamie Snowden? Was it a Jamie Snowden?
It wasn't a French horse, no. Was it a French horse?
Was it?
Easy Land.
Correct.
There we go. Good question.
Well done, team. What a team.
Yeah,
hey.
Do Wordle now.
Do Wordle, yeah, Brett.
I knew the answer.
Mention a couple of things. Don't forget, in the orchard, you can come to the Clanfarkas bar. You're going to have your cocktails.
Oh, lovely.
We are there. The last one was amazing.
Lee will be back there without his laptop. Yep. And also to say, in the retail village, you've got the limited edition.
We have our stand, we're selling the bottle. We also have our sort of core range there, our 10-year-old, our 12-year-old, our 25-year-old, which is also very famous, and our 105 for those who like their cask strength whiskey at a 60% ABV. We have that there as well, which we're quite famous for. And the usual sort of hats and umbrellas if it's still raining. So we've got everything. Anything Glenfarclas related, we have it.
Lawrence, you are also the most youthful alcohol seller.
I mean, I've ever come across.
Yeah,
you're legal. I'm from Scotland. We start early.
We're only just very, very jealous because I'm presuming you're like 35 or something. But thank you so much for coming in.
No pleasure being here. Thank you for having us.
As I say, sorry about the race, but we're very much enjoying Glenfarclas' continued support of the Cheltenham Festival. Alcohol by volume.
ABV.
Time to check in now on day two with our resident artist, Liz Armstrong. How did yesterday go, Liz? Was the trade good?
Yes, not too bad. Lots of people showed a lot of interest in the work because it's quite different. No big sales, but lots of little ones.
Okay, and what were people most interested in? We talked yesterday about your new commissions, using the coffee, the atmosphere at the start. Did they attract plenty of interest?
Yes, it certainly did. The two ones, the Gold Cup Fever, both the original pieces, attracted a lot of interest.
Good.
And I think people will come back and hopefully purchase over the 4 days.
So what is our Liz Armstrong artwork of the day today, this Wednesday?
Today we're going to talk about the piece in the centre, which
I like
is
this.
A 3-foot by 4-foot oil pigment with lots of texture and paint sort of created in the background to add the atmosphere again of a horse race and the speed and the anticipation.
I'm just getting up close to it now. It's called 2 feet.
It's called 2 feet move your body and 4 feet move your soul.
Oh, I love it. So, I'm sorry, 2 feet move your body, 4 feet move your soul.
2 feet help you to walk and 4 feet. 4 horses' feet, move your soul.
And did you do this entirely from your head, if you like, or was this? Because it's abstract. Where did you get the inspiration for this?
Well, I'm a big, probably don't know this artist, but he's a German artist called Ansley Kiefer.
I'm
a big.
That's
Kiefer
why we
fan.
Do this yeah. slot, Liz.
I'm a big Kiefer fan. He's got a studio in the south of France, and he does massive paintings. He paints, he's Jewish, and he paints a lot about his feelings about the sort of Holocaust and different things, but he uses the most amazing texture. He uses real sunflowers, he uses real bitumen, and again, gold pigment. They're very, very impressive. And so, having gone to his exhibition a few months ago, I was inspired and came back and mixed up all my pigments. And obviously we've got quite a lot of gold in it because it is a special occasion at this Cheltenham Festival this time round. And I created a horse just powering. And I put my favourite jockey of all time on his back.
Now, I'd have to be pretty smart to work out who that jockey was because obviously this is slightly more conceptual piece. So who is that, I think, in the green and pale green colours?
Well, it's A.P. McCoy.
Ah, okay.
I've always... he's a fantastic human being, and I just like his style of riding when he was in the saddle. And he just comes to my mind quite a lot because every jockey, like a horse, has got a different style, like a human being. None of them ride the same. None of them ride the same at all. They've got different rhythms, their feet are different kind of structures, and it's
well, if you are passing by Liz's stand, remind us the number again.
The number is number 47.
Right, number 47 in the shopping village. 2 feet move your body, 4 feet move your soul. Oil on canvas, 3x4, you can't miss it. It's the centerpiece of the stand today. And just underneath, look who's that, El Fabiolo,
one of my other lovely favorite horses at the moment. He's a gorgeous horse and he's running today and he'll win.
Liz, thank you so much. Tips as well.
Thank you, Nick. Have a lovely day.
All right, now we're all drunk. We'll give you some tips for today or beyond. Rishi.
I like Unexpected Party.
Oh my God, I've tipped that as well.
Wow.
And Mercury.
Yes.
Wow.
Jeez.
Unexected Party in the Grand Annual.
Oh, this is a tremendous bit of training,
be his
I think.
Day. He's only run twice over 2 miles over fences, both times in grade ones at Sandown. One's behind John Bonn and then behind Le Patron, Colonel Harry, earlier this season. He's down to a mark in the 130s. I think it's been the perfect lead-up to running off a handy mark in a race that will suit him. So
if Skelton can win with him and Langer, Dan, that would be...
Could happen.
Hashtag the doubters.
Yeah. Could Langer Dan win again?
I don't think so.
It's going to be a good talking point tomorrow if he does, isn't it?
What a talking point. I don't think he can win today.
I am going to be not nearly so interesting as Rishi and just say stay away, Faye. I think if he's ridden positively, he could get Factor File into trouble.
He could go off a really big price as well, because presuming Ballyburn goes and dots up, Factor File could start odds on.
Yeah, absolutely.
What price is Factor File now? Is he odds on now?
He's 4-5,
is he?
Yeah.
Mm. Well, there you are. Okay.
Thank you.
No. Rishi Prasad and Lee Motta said, one of the greatest double acts since...
Rice and Peas?
Hinge and Bracket.
Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, I love Cagney and Lacey.
Dempsey and Makepeace.
Glynis Barber. Who didn't like Glynis Barber?
Right, on that note, one for the teenagers. We will be... there's Gabby Logan asking Nevin Truesdale if racing's got an image problem. For goodness sake.
Jeez.
As if. We'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy Willy Wednesday.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.